free world is holding him accountable, along with 27 members of the European Union, including France, Germany, Italy.
President Biden says democracy will triumph over autocracy. It's Thursday, March 3rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia decides to send weapons to Ukraine. The UN ramps up assistance to Ukrainian refugees. The EU moves to wean itself from Russian oil, surviving China's camps in Xinjiang, and preventing avalanches. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China has announced it will not join the U.S. and European governments in imposing financial sanctions on Russia for its invasion into the sovereign country of Ukraine. In his first State of the Union address, U.S. President Joe Biden touted his success in uniting much of the world against Russian President Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. Biden said Kyiv is on the front line of the global battle between democracies and autocracies, and that democracy will prevail. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
With Russian President Vladimir Putin ratcheting up attacks on Ukrainian cities such as Kharkiv and Kyiv, U.S. President Joe Biden stood in the House chamber and told Americans the free world is united against Putin's aggression.
The free world is holding him accountable, along with 27 members of the European Union, including France, Germany, Italy, as well as countries like the United Kingdom, Canada, Japan, Korea, Australia, New Zealand, and many others, even Switzerland, are inflicting pain on Russia and supporting the people of Ukraine. Putin is now isolated from the world more than he has ever been.
Biden said Putin badly miscalculated when he launched a full-scale invasion of his neighbor.
He thought he could divide us at home, in this chamber, in this nation. He thought he could divide us in Europe as well. But Putin was wrong. We are ready. We are united, and that's what we did.
Biden said it will take time, but the United States and its NATO allies will remain united, and freedom will prevail over tyranny. Biden did not discuss the chaotic departure from Afghanistan last August. But in the Republican response to Biden's address, Governor Kim Reynolds of Iowa blasted the president for what she called his failure there.
The disastrous Afghanistan withdrawal did more than cost American lives. It betrayed our allies and emboldened our enemies.
Experts said in light of the current crisis, it makes sense that Biden devoted his foreign policy part of the speech to Ukraine, even though much there remains uncertain.
So now it's a moment where I think Biden thus far has proved a lot of his experience and value. But it all depends on how things play out in Ukraine.
Another expert told VOA the strong, positive, bipartisan response Biden received on his Ukraine remarks will be noticed in Moscow.
Foreign policy-wise, it's just a very important signal. Putin will be looking for any sign of division or vulnerability in American politics, and I think everybody in the room, not just Biden, but everybody in the room knew that this was not the moment to send that signal.
President Biden again made clear the United States will not send troops into Ukraine, but vowed that he and the other members of the NATO alliance will defend NATO territory. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
On the same day that President Biden delivered that address, a delegation of former senior U.S. defense and security officials visited Taiwan, a signal that the United States stands firm behind its commitments to the self-governing island and allies in the region. Former chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff Mike Mullen.
The United States will continue to oppose any unilateral changes to the status quo and will continue to support a peaceful resolution of cross-strait issues, consistent with the wishes and best interests of the people of Taiwan.
Taiwan's President Tsai Ing-wen said the U.S. visit during the crisis in Ukraine demonstrated the rock-solid ties between Taiwan and the U.S. and highlighted the island's role in regional and global security. She said China's military threat to the Taiwan Strait and the region is continually increasing. Taiwan, claimed by China as its own territory, is on alert in case Beijing tries to use the opportunity to make a move, though the government has reported no unusual Chinese activity. We invite you to read much more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Police in New Zealand end sit-in against vaccine mandates. Russia's Ukraine invasion rattles Asian geopolitics. EU markets gain amid worsening Ukraine crisis. Hong Kong residents brace for citywide lockdown. Ukraine crisis prompts fears of North Korean challenge to U.S. Seoul alliance. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. Australia says it plans to spend $50 million to buy missiles and ammunition to support Ukraine. Prime Minister Scott Morrison making the announcement Tuesday during a press conference. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
As the conflict in Ukraine intensifies, the Australian government has shifted its stance on sending military hardware to Ukrainian forces. Last week, Canberra said it would provide only technical assistance. That has changed. Now Prime Minister Scott Morrison said his country will buy military equipment and weapons for Ukraine as part of a coordinated effort with other Western nations to help its armed forces resist Russia's invasion. It's unclear how quickly the armaments would be delivered. Prime Minister Scott Morrison made the announcement at a media briefing on Tuesday.
We're talking missiles, we're talking ammunition. We're talking supporting them in their defence of their own homeland in Ukraine, and we'll be doing that in partnership with NATO. I'm not going to go into the specifics of that because I don't plan to give the Russian government a heads up about what's coming their way, but I can assure them it's coming your way.
Australia is also contributing $25 million toward humanitarian support for international organisations that are helping Ukrainians in an evacuation effort as they leave their country escaping the conflict. Hundreds of thousands of people have left to seek asylum and refuge in neighbouring regions. Prime Minister Morrison has ruled out sending Australian troops to fight in the war. He's also urged Australian citizens not to travel and join Ukraine's militia in the ongoing fighting against the Russian military. Morrison said the legal position of foreign combatants in the conflict was unclear. Legal experts say Australian laws prohibit citizens from joining in other countries' conflicts unless they're members of an official foreign army. Morrison said Russia has self-selected themselves as a pariah state following its invasion of neighbouring Ukraine. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Australia's largest city, Sydney, is preparing for dangerous flash flooding as other Australian east coast cities begin cleaning up following the record floods that killed at least 14 people. Dean Naramore is from the Bureau of Meteorology.
To reiterate, severe weather warnings current from Newcastle down to the south coast of New South Wales for heavy rainfall and damaging winds.
In the New South Wales town of Lismore, 600 kilometres north of Sydney, residents began the cleanup. Four deaths have now been confirmed as of Wednesday, and authorities expected that death toll to climb. Still ahead on VOA Asia, the United Nations ramps up aid to Ukrainian refugees. Happening now in Asia. Millions of citizens in the Philippines celebrated the observance of Ash Wednesday after a two-year ban on the Lent tradition due to the coronavirus pandemic. Businesses and public transport are now permitted to operate at full capacity. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. So happy you've decided to join us here on VOA Asia. United Nations agencies are ramping up humanitarian assistance to millions of Ukrainians caught in the crosshairs of the Russian invasion. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Ukrainian government reports Russian airstrikes have killed hundreds of people and wounded more than 1,600. UN Human Rights Office estimates are more conservative, but officials say the real toll is likely to be much higher than their monitors have been able to verify. A spokesman for the UN Children's Fund, James Elder, is in Lviv in western Ukraine. He says the city is in utter turmoil, with thousands of people seeking to escape the fighting. Given the chaotic situation, he says, it is not possible to know how many people, including children, are being killed.
We know that thousands and thousands are at risk, and we know that more children gut-wrenchingly are going to die or be injured in this unless fighting ends. There are tens of thousands of children in orphanages in Ukraine, many of those in these major cities which are under bombardment right now. So we hold the gravest fears for all these children.
Elder says UNICEF has been working on both sides of what is known as the contact line. This is the 500-kilometer zone separating Russian-backed territories in eastern Ukraine from the rest of the country. He says the agency aims to increase its support to tens of thousands of vulnerable people across the country. The World Health Organization representative in Poland, Paloma Kuchy, says the agency is preparing to help a potentially massive number of refugees arriving from Ukraine. Speaking from the Polish capital, Warsaw, she says arrivals who are injured will need treatment. She says there will be a need to prevent and treat people with communicable diseases such as tuberculosis.
We are seeing a need to provide assistance and vaccinations for COVID-19. We are seeing, since there are many kids coming, we are also seeing that a need for routine vaccinations like measles or treatment of people with pre-existing conditions, you know, such as diabetes, cancer, health problems.
Kuchy says a first shipment of medicines and medical supplies was expected in Poland Wednesday. She also says experts in mental health, as well as health interventions and emergency operations, also are being deployed. The World Food Program is launching a 3-month emergency operation to provide food assistance for people fleeing the conflict. The WFP says it will scale up aid to reach up to 3.1 million people affected by the fighting inside Ukraine. It adds WFP staff will be on standby to assist refugees in neighboring countries. The UN Refugee Agency reports the number of Ukrainian refugees has increased by 114,000 since Tuesday and now stands at more than 874,000. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Read and see much more on this story and many others at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
Happening now in Asia. Foreign Minister of Japan Yoshimasa Hayashi met Ukraine's ambassador to Japan Wednesday. He wore a blue suit and a yellow tie to show solidarity with Ukraine. All the big stories coming your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Despite efforts to cut off Russia from global financial and currency markets following its invasion of Ukraine, Europe is still sending Moscow hundreds of millions of euros every day for gas and oil. Russia supplies around 40% of the continent's energy supplies, and this sector has not been included in any sanctions packages. Europe is now urgently planning ways to wean itself off Russian energy. As Henry Ridgewell reports from Berlin, Germany is the European nation most dependent on Russian energy, and there is new urgency to move towards renewable energy there, not only to meet climate goals, but to end the supply of euros to the Kremlin.
Russia's major banks have been sanctioned, its oligarchs targeted with asset freezes and travel bans. Russian planes have been banned from Europe's skies. But Russian gas and oil continues to flow into Europe uninterrupted, and Europe is paying hundreds of millions of dollars for it every day. EU ministers met in Brussels Monday to discuss how to break that dependency.
But every day we spend 350 million euro, which we give to the Russian system, to be able to, for them to invest in arms which are dropping on the city of Kiev and elsewhere today. So yes, for climate reasons and for the security of our people, we need to rid ourselves of that dependency on fossil fuels.
But Russia supplies around a third of Europe's gas, and the latest figures show imports have actually increased since its invasion of Ukraine. The soaring price makes the trade even more profitable.
I think that the West is going to try to continue to hold back on sanctioning the oil and gas sector.
Germany is among the EU states most dependent on Russian energy. It has already announced the cancellation of the $11 billion Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline from Russia.
We have to think about the future. Germany will need more gas because domestic production is declining. We also need more gas-fired power plants, and we will also use more gas in the industrial sector in order to achieve the climate targets. And we have to answer the question, where will gas come from in the future?
Germany announced plans to build two liquefied natural gas, or LNG, terminals to diversify supply. Europe's LNG imports hit a record high in January, with nearly half coming from the United States. Germany has pledged to switch off its nuclear power stations by the end of this year and all coal-fired plants by 2030. The government said those decisions could be reversed following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The continent must speed up the change to renewable energy, says former Environment and Energy Secretary Rainer Barker.
There should be a very clear message to Russia now. We don't want your gas and we don't want your oil in the future. It's going to be painful because prices are probably going to be higher, but the only way to free ourselves from this dependency from fossil fuels is to put efficiency and renewables instead of the fossil energies.
Meanwhile, European energy giants, including Royal Dutch Shell and British Petroleum, have announced they are offloading their stakes in Russian oil firms worth billions of dollars. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Berlin.
Making headlines in Asia, Ukrainian protesters continue to voice their anger on the steps of the Russian embassy in Bangkok, Thailand. Demonstrators wave blue and yellow flags of their homeland while displaying posters criticizing President Vladimir Putin. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, human rights activists accuse China of detaining more than a million people in Xinjiang's internment camps. Sanjar Kamidov spoke to some who survived the camps and fled to the U.S. Anna Rice narrates his story.
This Islamic school in the Washington, D.C. suburb of Fairfax, Virginia, is open again after a COVID-induced quarantine. Many of the children who attend are immigrants from a region in China known as Xinjiang. They are Uyghurs, members of a Muslim ethnic group that live in Xinjiang. Here, children are taught the Uyghur language and literature, as well as the basics of the Islamic religion and Turkic history and culture. Almost every student in this school has family in Xinjiang. They say their relatives are either in detention camps or have died.
How I know is because my uncle has been in prison. His sentence was 3 years, but they kept him for 20 years.
My aunt, my grandma, and uncle are kept in back home, and we're not allowed to see them. We're not allowed to see them, and they can't come visit.
My grandma or my grandpa, because they took away their passports, and we can only call them, but that's rarely.
My mother's side of my grandparents died because of sickness and couldn't go to the hospital.
These are portraits of their relatives and loved ones. They say all of them are still either in camps or unaccounted for. And they accuse Chinese authorities of persecuting all ethnic minorities in Xinjiang, not just Uyghurs, but also Kazakhs, Kyrgyz, and Uzbeks. Beijing denies the existence of detention camps in China. The Chinese government calls the facilities housing Uyghurs in Xinjiang vocational training schools or educational centers. The authorities emphasize these re-education measures are aimed at combating extremism and terrorism. But this policy is actually aimed at forcing assimilation, says Rutgers University law professor N.G. Abdelkader.
Individuals who are viewed by the authorities as not adhering to this policy of conformity have been detained in internment camp. And currently there's at least 1 million Uyghur Muslims detained in internment camp. That Beijing has euphemistically named these internment camps as counterterrorism centers.
Some who survived the camps and managed to flee to the U.S. have testified before Congress more than once about their experience. 44-year-old Tursunay Ziyawuddin, who's ethnically Uyghur, says she was arrested twice by police and spent over 10 months in a detention camp. Many of her cellmates were arrested for practicing Islam.
In the camp, I learned that most of the people were incarcerated for no reason. They have been arrested for praying, reading Quran, wearing hijab scarves, in general for practicing Islam.
Inside the camp, Tursunay and all her cellmates were under 24/7 video surveillance.
We were not allowed to speak our native tongue in the camp. We could not say the word Xinjiang. We were immediately corrected. There is no Xinjiang, there is only the Republic of China.
Right groups, including Human Rights Watch, estimate over 1 million people are being held in Xinjiang camps. In the meantime, Uyghur children at this school in Fairfax are learning a traditional Uyghur dance. They are enjoying the freedom they have found in the U.S. to be who they are, Uyghurs and Muslims, a freedom that does not exist for their relatives in China. For Sanjar Hamidov in Fairfax, Virginia, NRI's VOA News.
Avalanche forecasters use a slew of technology to predict avalanche risk and help lovers of backcountry winter sports to be prepared. Shelley Schlender reports.
Beautiful, but it can be deadly. 37 people died last year in avalanches in the U.S. Avalanche forecasters routinely give backcountry users a bracing message.
You have a lot of opportunity to not die by not getting caught in avalanches.
To promote backcountry safety, the Colorado Avalanche Information Center provides interactive avalanche maps and weekly forecasts.
The slopes that have been safe to ride for the last few weeks may no longer be safe.
Weather satellite imagery and geospatial databases of mountain terrain help forecasters predict avalanche risk. Forecasters also dig snow pits by hand.
You can see the very large, weak depth hoar at the bottom of the snowpack.
A faster way to get this data may come from laser-based LIDAR devices.
It has a 10-kilometer range, and it can survey 360 degrees.
Kevin Hammonds is also researching a so-called smart probe
that has both a force-resistant sensor and a near-infrared sensor in the probe, so that as you probe it through the snow, it's collecting all this data as it goes.
No technology can predict every avalanche, so experts recommend safety classes and an avalanche beacon.
It's a radio device that sends out a signal. Everybody in your group carries one. If somebody gets caught in an avalanche, the rest of the group can pick up that signal and locate that person.
Even a seemingly small mistake can turn adventure into disaster. So Ethan Green adds this advice.
The most important thing to do is to use the tech between your ears, which is your brain, to make good decisions and avoid those avalanche-prone slopes.
And with the help of technology, winter sports lovers have a better chance of surviving on the slopes. For VOA News, Shelley Schlender in Boulder, Colorado.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascajo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Jessica Stone in Washington. Enjoy the day.